Before we get started, let me just mention that this show was recorded before this weekend's events in Charlottesville, Virginia, so of course we did not talk about them. We probably will next week. Thank you. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, August 11th, 2017. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello, everybody.
So, yet another show. Let me get the agenda right out there. We're going to talk about North Korea. We're going to talk about the Google anti-diversity doc, and some people would quibble with that name of it, and all the stuff surrounding that. And I think we're just going to have a lightning round after that, because we've got a few other things going on. We had, Paul Manafort was raided by the FBI. We had a new Hillary Clinton email court order. We had Donald Trump thanking Putin for kicking out our embassy staff. We had this thing with donuts and water and the DNC and whatever the hell that was, and miscellaneous other things. We might do this in the little starting round. We actually had a user request 2 weeks in a row that we have been ignoring. Our loyal listener, Ed, says we should talk about Venezuela.
Oh, that's right.
That's
okay,
right.
Yes, we were going to talk about that. Okay.
So anyway, that's the general plan. In this little intro segment, the one thing I wanted to mention is that last week on the show, in passing, we sort of said, hey, we should start up a Slack for the show. And for those of you who don't know, Slack is essentially a glorified chat thing that groups and organizations use in order to talk about things. So I did go ahead and set up one for Curmudgeon's Corner, and I seeded it by sort of inviting all of the people who have co-hosted the show in the past, a couple other people that Yvonne and I have been talking about political things with, and a couple of our longtime loyal listeners. And we have had 8 people join the Slack so far, and we're sort of exchanging links and chatting about the news of the day over the course of the week and putting potential topics out there as things that we might want to talk about on the show. And going from there, essentially. Now, the one additional thing for those of you out there, first of all, for those of you, is your phone making noise, Yvonne?
My iPad is making noise.
You're going, did you every 10 seconds. I can't even think.
Sorry, it's a stupid thing.
You know, there's a mute button on the side of these things.
It is muted, which is the crazy thing.
You may have to turn it off. If you can't silence it.
Okay, I just did.
Okay. Now, what I was going to say is, first of all, for those of you who I have actually sent invites to, so if you are one of the people who have co-hosted this show in the past, and you have not accepted our invite to join this Slack chat, please do. It would be great to have you in there. We have, of people who've co-hosted before, Ed's in the chat and Jen's in the chat and John is in the chat. So we've got a few of those folks. My daughter Amy is in the chat. So we've got a few folks, but we are also missing a few of you. So if you have co-hosted the show in the past, please join us and you can be in there. If you're in that category and have not received an invitation, hit me up and I'll send it to you again. Or if you
hit
can't
me.
Find it, hit me. But for everybody else who's just a listener, we have added access to our Slack at the $2 level on our Patreon. So if you like the show and you want to participate in the creation of the show and the discussion that goes on in between shows, and you want to support us anyway, go to patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. And if you contribute at the $2 a month or above limit, $2 a month or above levels, we'll send you an invite into the Slack. How's that sound?
Woo!
Yeah, I honestly don't know, you know, if you, if, you know, you have to want to support the show anyway. Like, I mean, who would really pay $2 a month just to talk to us? You know, come on, let's be realistic. But I thought I'd mention it because we talked about it on the show last week, and I was just like, okay, let's do it. And my son is banging on the door. Snip, snip. Anyway, so folks, if you like to support the show, support us, and you can get in our Slack. Not that anybody would really want to, but you know, it's fun. We're exchanging links, we're talking about stuff. You too can participate.
Yay!
That's my intro segment stuff. You got anything, Yvonne?
I'm tired.
You're tired. Yvonne mentioned on last week's show that he's starting a new job this week. So, yeah, we don't need details of your job, but first week, tiring.
It's you know, it's like it's been an exhausting week. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just been a lot between the travel and just a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm tired.
You know, this week, I don't know if it's the smoke that's still hanging around in Washington, Washington State, where I am, from forest fires up north in Canada, or whether it's simply like I haven't been getting enough sleep or whatever. But all week this week, like mid-afternoon, it feels like I've been like something just stepped on me. And instantly, like somewhere around 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm like done. Like, my energy is completely and totally gone, and I feel like I have to force myself to finish the workday. And then I've been having, like, on, you know, it's, you know, I said it's Friday UTC as we're recording this. It's, like, after just after 3:30 UTC, but that's Thursday U.S. time. And 2 out of the 4 days this week so far, one was close, but on Wednesday, I actually had to like just pull over halfway through my commute home and be like, I'm too tired. Like, this is dangerous. I need to pull over and I didn't actually take a nap, but I went to a Starbucks and I had a snack and a hot chocolate or whatever. And I sort of woke myself up again. But, and I think I only did that actually once, but, on another day, I recognized I was sort of in that state. So did that right before I left. And on the third day, you know, it was really close to that. Like I was feeling like that, but I was like, I've only got like 1 mile till home. I can make it. And I made myself go home. But, you know, all week it's been like that. And it's just like, I don't know. I'm like, why am I dragging like this? I don't know.
Nah, it's probably the smoke.
It might be the smoke. I mean, because that's the one thing I can detect that's noticeably different. I mean, there are a couple nights where I had less sleep than I would like, but nothing that's abnormal compared to other weeks. Like, you know, my schedule is such that on, you know, certain days of the week, you know, I get a full night's sleep. Other days I have early meetings and so I have to get up early and so I have less sleep those nights. But that's all normal. There wasn't anything unusual this week along those lines. So the only really thing I can think of that's really different is the smoke. And I haven't been like really bothered by it. Like I'm not like, you know, it's not like I'm taking extra medication beyond what I take anyway. It's not like I'm feeling like I'm in distress, but I feel like it's just dragging on me. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's been happening. Yeah, we'll see.
Okay, so let's do this.
Hopefully the smoke will go away because
It's supposed to clear out this weekend.
I hope so because, I mean, when I've had that situation with the smoke down in South Florida, I mean, we've struggled at home. I mean, so I think it's probably that. So,
yeah. Yeah, I would imagine. But, you know, whatever. Deal with it. As long as I will say this, though, for anybody out there, this applies too. Like, I noticed while I was on the road driving home that I was tired enough for it to be dangerous. And I pulled the hell off the road. Like, and I'm like, I'm getting off at the very next exit. I'm going to go find a parking lot. I'm going to go find a Starbucks, whatever. I should not be driving. And it's important to recognize when you're at that point and not just keep going. Because, people have made this point before, but just to put it out there, driving sleepy is just as bad as driving drunk.
Oh, God. Yes. There's been research to back that up. Yes.
Yeah. So if you are tired, enough that you're like, you know, your head is jerking up because you start to fall asleep, you should not be driving. Get the hell off the road for your own safety and for that of those around you. Okay, let's take a break and we will come back and we'll start off with all this North Korea stuff. And like I said, agenda, North Korea, Google, then a lightning round with everything else.
Bombs! Bombs!
Kaboom.
Do. Hello, this is Ravina. I'm here to let you know about Sam the Curmudgeon's other podcasts, the Wiki of the Day podcasts. Wiki of the Day comes in three varieties, popular, random, and featured. Each highlights a new Wikipedia article each day. They just pick the articles differently. This week on Random Wiki of the Day, you would have heard this summary for Urhaap. Urhaap is the first studio album by Widespread Panic lead guitarist Michael Hauser. Urhaap is the first solo studio album by Michael Hauser, former lead guitarist of Widespread Panic, released posthumously on September 24, 2002, on Sanctuary Records. Recorded in John Keane's studio in Athens, Georgia in March 2002, the all-instrumental album features Mikey on guitar, mandolin and piano. Bandmate Domingo S. Ortiz plays percussion, Keane plays guitar, keyboards and pedal steel guitar, and local musicians David Henry and Andy Carlson play violin and cello respectively. The album is all original tracks, with only Cleburne Terrace having been played previously by Widespread Panic on several occasions in the early 1990s. Musically, it is a departure from the typical output of Widespread Panic, with very sparse arrangements and acoustic melodies, lilting lullabies and very little percussion. That's it. See? Fun, entertaining, and educational, right? Okay, now look for and subscribe to the Wiki of the Day family of podcasts on your podcast playing software of choice, or just go to wikioftheday.com to check out our archives. Now back to Curmudgeon's Corner. Do.
Okay, so North Korea, the calm, collected heads are prevailing, and everything's getting de-escalated, and nothing's going to happen. Like, it always, you know, nothing happens in North Korea.
I saw something, what the heck, what was Trump's statement on, what was it that he said? Something about, they'll meet a, what? The
first thing? Something. The fire and that one?
Fire and what the hell was it? I can't remember what the hell it was.
We are so on top of it this week.
Something. Oh, God. Jesus. I'm sorry, folks. I'm just a useless bum. It's something about hell and fury.
Fire and what? Fury, I believe.
Fire and fury. Of course, a whole bunch of places printed it as fire and fury. Could he have? I started thinking. Could he have meant furry?
No.
Double R.
So the exact quote. Sure? The exact quote, Yvonne. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
Yeah, I saw the video. Yeah. So it's not furry.
Not furry. And so you know, look. Okay. All right.
I have never heard a president of the United States say something that scary in my life.
But at the same time, it's typical Donald Trump.
I get that, but
everything out of his mouth is...
Okay, understand.
Yes?
It's Donald Trump with the button on our nuclear arsenal. Donald Trump.
Yes? Okay? This worries you in some way, Yvonne?
Just a tad.
And then later on, when asked about it, he said, maybe I wasn't harsh enough. I should have been harsher.
Right. He thinks that he should have been harsher. I don't know why he fired Scaramucci.
And so, of course, you know, this is going back to the whole treating Donald Trump literally thing as well, because people, you know, on the one hand, fire and fury like the world has never seen. Well, the worst fire and fury the world has ever seen is Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And so, of course, people immediately interpreted that as a threat to use nuclear weapons. Now, various people in the Trump administration have tried to walk that back and said, nah, you know, that's not necessarily what he meant, blah, 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 you know, and
only to be met by Trump saying, oh, I should have been worse.
Right. But, you know, look, there are all the kinds of different ways you can interpret that. But Donald Trump's typical shtick is to amp everything up to 11. You know, and apparently right. I saw one thing like this, like the world has never seen, is apparently a verbal tic of his. He uses this all the time when he's talking about one thing or another.
Well, the world had never seen, but he used, I saw that, but the whole fire and fury, really? Yes.
And there was some question, did he completely improvise this? Was this a prepared statement? They're trying to pitch the line that this was improvised. But, you know, when he said it, it looked like he'd at least thought about it and picked out those words in advance. Even if he hadn't told anybody else, if you watch the statement, it seems like he, you know, he had planned to say that. Now, the word from the State Department and the Pentagon and all these folks are sort of, they knew he was going to say something with that kind of belligerent tone, but not the specific words. Those were on the fly at the time. And, you know, and we've had, as usual with this administration, inconsistent statements depending on which part of the government you choose to listen to. And so there's a mixed message. It's all over the place. On the one hand, you got Donald Trump threatening nuclear annihilation. On the other hand, you've got people sort of saying, no, we're doing sanctions. They need to back off and we're serious, but, you know, let's not go crazy. And it's just all over the place in between. Now, of course, part of his statement was that he would say that, you know, I read that they will be met by fire and fury, but the beginning of that statement was North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. And then if they didn't, they will be met by fire and fury, et cetera, et cetera. So, and of course, 3 hours later, threats. 3 hours later, North Korea started talking about Guam.
And they were going to bomb Guam.
Well, look. They made an initial statement and then they put out some clarifications. The what it looks like right now that they're saying they're going to do, and this is almost like a pre-announcement. Like, you know, they're practically filing flight plans for their missiles to make sure people get out of the way. You know, they are preparing to, pending the decision from the North Korean leadership, to shoot off 4 missiles simultaneously that will fly over Japan and then land around Guam. Like, the idea is that the 4 missiles would go on, you know, in a circle sort of around Guam, each of them quite a bit offshore, but basically showing the intention of this is A, show that they can shoot 4 missiles at once. So with the notion there being like, air defense stuff, even if it would be able to handle 1, maybe 4 would overwhelm the air defenses. I mean, most of the defenses against this kind of missile have had mixed results in testing at best. So they're looking to show that they could potentially overwhelm those kinds of defenses. And if they can actually shoot off 4 of these and have them land where they were planned to land in a circle around Guam, it shows that they can aim too. Now, this is, these are not the ICBM class missiles that they tested a couple weeks ago that have the potential range to hit the continental United States. This is a much shorter range missile, intermediate range, that they've had for years. So this is much more tested technology that they're talking about. The bottom line here, though, is, assuming it is a bluff, they called Donald Trump's bluff. And now what?
Right. Now what?
Because all Donald Trump's pattern is talk loudly and yell at people and hope to bully them into doing what you want. So now if the North Koreans say, okay, fine, whatever, we're going to do it anyway, we don't believe you. We don't believe you're actually going to do this. But then that kind of puts Donald Trump in a position where he almost has to do it, or he looks like an idiot.
Right.
And that's exactly the kind of position we want to be in, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, we want to be so fucked. Jesus Christ.
So where do you think this is going, Yvonne? Is somebody going to back off this ramp here? Who's going to blink?
I don't know, man. What I hope? This is what I hope. If Donald Trump is going to do something stupid and that fucking asshole penis doesn't invoke the 25th Amendment, I'm going to blame him for this shit.
Well, I tweeted, and I've tweeted things of similar type before, but I really hope Pence has a pre-signed 25th Amendment letter sitting in a safe somewhere or in his back pocket or wherever that can be pulled out at a moment's notice if necessary.
If necessary, because this idiot wants to launch nuclear war.
Now, obviously, you know, what seems like necessary is going to be very different to Mike Pence than it would be to me, you know. But if it gets serious,
I would think, my thought is very simple. Fucking nuclear war is very simple.
So you're thinking the scenario is if Donald Trump is in the Oval Office jumping up and down saying, I don't fucking care, nuke him, that's when Pence should pull out the letter.
I would hope.
I would agree that would be a good time to do that. But, you know, for all we know, Pence is sitting there saying, yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
I don't think he is. As much as I would like to think that Pence is a fucking, you know, as much as I would like to think how bad a person he is, okay, and how much shit I disagree with him, I don't think that's the case. I just don't. I have zero conviction that that's the case, that he wants a nuclear war started.
So step down from that, though. Let's say Donald Trump says, I want preemptive conventional Tomahawk attacks on the top 30 targets within North Korea that we think are related to the nuclear program.
I think it's going to be very hard to stop him from doing that.
I agree. I think that's the kind of thing where, you know, okay, maybe it's a little bit rash. Maybe it's intemperate. Maybe it's not thinking through the consequences.
But he's not starting a nuclear war.
But he's not starting a nuclear war. Yeah, I mean, it could still escalate. Because,
Still escalate to that.
Of course, part of the fear there is if you do that kind of preemptive attack on North Korea, North Korea potentially says, it's use it or lose it time.
Yeah, I know. That's what I keep thinking. I mean, did they go and they think that? Yeah.
But honestly, I think North Korea is also bluffing. I think you've got two folks bluffing here. And that if we did do that sort of conventional attack, you might see North Korea not respond in that way. So that they can look like the bigger people there. And like, look, we're the victim again. They're attacking us. We didn't do anything.
Agreed.
Like even the Guam thing, they could be like, we told you exactly where they were going so that there'd be no, you know, no surprises, nobody accidentally in the way. We made these things were unarmed, and yeah, we made them go around Guam, but we didn't hit Guam. We landed in international waters, you know, and so what are you doing?
Right. Yeah, I know. I get it. I'm with you, you know. It's possible. They could play that card. I don't disagree.
One of the things here, like I said, the administration seems to be speaking with like 12 different voices. There's no consistency. You know, Donald Trump has repeatedly said that his strategy for this kind of thing is unpredictability. Whereas previous administrations have tried to be as predictable as possible so that we could, you know, there would be no surprises. No one would misinterpret. This, to me, seems like you're just ramping up the possibilities of having something happen accidentally because somebody misinterprets something or whatever.
Oh, hell yeah.
But that's what Donald Trump seems to want. He seems to think like it's sort of the crazy like a fox defense, where if you think the guy on the other side is crazy, you're going to back off because you don't know what the fuck he's going to do.
Okay, I understand that. I get that that's a strategy, I guess. Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes I use that. The thing is that when we're talking about nuclear war, it's kind of a very, the margin for error is not that great.
Well, the other thing I've heard,
if you're wrong,
I've heard some people in commenting on this, and I'm sorry, everybody, I can't remember exactly who said what here, but basically say, you know, look, if something happened here, there might be lots of casualties, but most of them will be North Korean. You know, so...
Oh, yeah, the Guamians, who gives a fuck about them, right? I mean, whatever, you know?
Well, Guam, South Korea, Japan are all potentially in the crossfire, but it certainly seems like, you know, the way Trump is thinking about this is, like, those hardly matter. It's like, I don't know, and maybe that's unfair. Maybe that's unfair. I mean, but it's like, how is this action going? I guess the theory, to go back, I was going to ask, what's the logic here? The logic here, the thought process behind it, is that by acting like this, by being belligerent, the North Koreans will get scared and back down. But
possible.
That seems, it's possible. And frankly, if it happens, Donald Trump will come off looking like a genius. But, but the thing is, it's incredibly high risk. And I guess,
yes, that's the problem with it. I mean, it's just the risk of, if you're wrong, the consequences are just catastrophic.
And,
so it's very cavalier.
And I recognize that on the spectrum, I am a risk-averse person, you know? And maybe I don't understand this mindset of, you know, you got to risk a lot to win a lot, you know? But again, this is not like you're gambling some money here and... You know, if it goes bad, you declare bankruptcy and you keep going, like Donald Trump has done in all his business ventures in the past. This is, if you gamble wrong and things go catastrophically wrong, millions of people die.
Yep, so I've heard. Good possibility.
Now, of course, again, there's all kinds of possibilities that don't result in millions of people dying, and probably, you know, the chance of that,
it's just that
is probably just fairly low. I mean, most of the probable outcomes here are probably, you know, limited casualty or maybe even no casualty because somebody backs off. It's just that even if the chances of this going south into something absolutely catastrophic are relatively small, when the cost is that high, I don't want to make that gamble.
Right. That's the thing. You know, if you're gambling, like, say, you know, if I'm gambling $50, you know, on something, it's like, you know, whatever. If I'm gambling my entire life savings on one play, then I'm a little bit like, oh, shit.
Even if you present a scenario where you've got a 99% shot of doubling your money, let's say, but a 1% shot of you lose your life savings and you're out on the street tomorrow.
Right. And I don't have a house. I had nothing. You know, it's either I got a 90%+ chance of doing that, or I've got a, you know, 5% chance of being completely on the street with nothing.
I would not take that gamble.
I would even though I am a guy that likes risk, I would be seriously intimidated by such a such odds. I don't know if I would do it myself either. I think I would be on your boat.
Yeah. I'd be looking for like a way to cheat. Like, okay, can I lose everything, but then I know can that I can get this back. House? Yeah, can I save my house, or can, you know, I still have, you know, a job or whatever. I'd try to like bargain my way out of it so that the downside wasn't actually that bad, you know?
Right.
But assuming the downside really was that bad, you know, or to make it even higher stakes than losing all your stuff, you know, 95% chance you double your money, 5% chance we shoot you in the head right now. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's 5% chance of me being shot in the head. I don't like those odds. I don't like them. Not one bit.
So I don't know. Yeah. What are your predictions for next week, Yvonne? Like, are we going to be at war next week, or is everything going to blow over? Because, look, the usual pattern with North Korea, going back decades, is a few times a year, they make some noise, they do something, we start getting all worked up about the North Korea situation, and then it sort of resolves itself and goes away for another 6 months.
Yeah, here's the problem we got. We got a wild card in the equation. It's called Trump.
Now, do you think,
like somebody said today, the jokes around was one is, yeah, you know, if we all go out, you know, it should be because it was just a fucking like contest between two idiots to see who had the biggest dick, or stuff like that are the jokes I heard today about this.
There's been a lot of gallows humor about this. I mean, who is the
biggest lunatic contest or something, or
there's also been a lot of people. There have been a lot of people joking about digging bomb shelters behind their house and pulling out the How to Survive a Nuclear War books from the 60s and all this kind of stuff. And like what, you know, there have been news outlets publishing this shit, you know,
if North Korea launches those four rockets they threaten. OK. All right. I got to tell you, there's going to be a lot of scared people.
Yeah.
Around. I mean, you know, there's going to be a lot of scared people.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, and even though a lot of Americans are going to be like, it's just Guam, to be honest. They're like, they didn't nuke LA. They didn't nuke Seattle. They did a couple unarmed missiles towards Guam.
I think that's bullshit. I think the moment that four kind of missiles like that, they're launched and they're going to be against the U.S. territory, it's going to rattle a lot of people.
Oh, I'm not saying it won't rattle a lot of people. I'm saying there will be people saying, no big deal, in terms of feeling scared for their own personal safety.
The Trumpkins will say,
Well, more. Right, because it'll be an excuse at that point to now we're going to go get them.
Right.
And that's actually what scares like me a lot more. I'm not really honestly very scared that, you know, look, I'm in Seattle. I'm on the West Coast. That's theoretically in the range of North Korea's capability now. Although they're still working on reentry technology, et cetera.
Yeah, but I'm course, not really. And I'm supposedly having to travel to Hong Kong next month. So I will put myself in range.
Even closer.
Of this fucking, yes.
So I'm honestly not all that scared that, you know, I'm going to go into work tomorrow and Seattle's going to get nuked. But I am scared about crazy, stupid escalation such that we're in a completely avoidable war, you know, for no good reason, really. Now, I mean, you can say, you know, okay, well, you know, North Korea getting nukes is really important and we need to keep that from happening. And so that is a good reason for war. I honestly don't think so. I mean, let's look at the reality here is that, you know, India and Pakistan got nukes. Israel got nukes. North Korea has actually had nukes for a few years now. These are manageable risks through containment, to be honest. I mean, at some point, somebody is going to set off a fucking nuke somewhere in the world, and we're going to lose a city. I would rather it not be us that causes the third city to be nuked. You know?
Fuck yeah! Agreed!
Honestly, I'd rather it not happen at all, but I kind of feel like it's inevitable. Like, the nuclear genie can't really be put back in the bottle. Technology is improving and improving and improving. You know, if we're not already there, we certainly will be within a few more decades where basically any country who wants a nuke will be able to have one. And so we need to figure out how to change the way that countries interact with each other so that can be true and we're not worried. And the problem, yeah, the I problem know. Is, so in the Korean situation, what we should be looking at are forget the nukes. Forget the nukes. Let's assume they're there. We should be looking at how do we de-escalate the situation between North Korea and the rest of the world so that the North Koreans don't feel threatened by the rest of the world and the rest of the world doesn't feel threatened by North Korea. And it's not about make them give up their weapons. It's about how do we almost the opposite of our actual strategy with sanctions and everything. How do we bring them back into the world community so that they have extensive relationships with the rest of the world? So it's in their interest to improve relations rather than to make them worse. And, you know, but Donald Trump's whole philosophy and Bannon's whole philosophy in these guys is, you know, international arrangements are bullshit. Every country's in and of it for themselves. They don't believe in mutually beneficial relationships. They believe everything's correct. A zero-sum yep. game.
Zero-sum game.
So that, yep. the kind of thing I just talked about doesn't even enter the mind. It's like, do they win or do they lose? Do we win or do we lose? There's no thought of,
right.
hey, can we create a win-win situation here where we improve the economics in North Korea, improve how much they interact with the rest of the world, and make it so that they don't want to use nuclear weapons. Or even that.
Of course, the thing is that I'm like, look.
And I know I sound impossibly naive here, but.
No, it's not that. I mean, I think the one thing is that in the case of North Korea, I mean, this thing has been going on for how long? Just fucking shit show.
Forever. I mean, this back and forth about North Korean nuclear weapons was going on in the Clinton administration and probably even.
Exactly. Before. Of course, somebody said that the fate of the whole world could be resting on Dennis Rodman.
That makes me feel better.
I know. I mean, but I will say this, if Dennis Rodman could go over there and defuse the situation, they'll fucking, like, I'll be grateful to him. I'm not gonna get upset.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll take any help right now over our president's stupidity. I mean, it's just, to me, the whole thing is just like, look, it's, Trump is like the, you know, the guy that just brings out the big red blanket, you know, to try to like goad the bull to see if he's going to hit him. That's all he's doing. That's what he's doing. And I'm like, yeah, is there a good chance that maybe the bull won't go after you? Yeah, but what the fuck, you know, if he does, what the hell are we doing?
Well, and
why
also.
Why are you goading him?
And he also doesn't have the curiosity to learn about the history and the background and the details. Like, I don't know how many times we've said God. Trump is not a detail guy. He doesn't know. He doesn't care. Like, what you would, he doesn't listen to the experts. So, I mean, in this kind of scenario, you would hope that, you know, Trump would be listening to all kinds of people who've spent time learning about and thinking about North Korea for decades and have some sort of insight, and that he would be carefully paying attention to the intelligence he's getting and looking at things like psychological profiles of the North Korean leadership and how do we think they would react to this or that.
No, because those come from intelligence agencies, and, you know, those people are all discredited idiots that, you know, they don't know anything of what to
do. Now, I would not be surprised if people have tried to present that kind of stuff to Donald Trump. I would be surprised if he was paying any attention to it.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, you know, he doesn't pay attention to any of that shit. I mean, not the State Department, not intelligence agencies. He just watches whatever, Fox morning TV shows, whatever bullshit.
Okay. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about this Google document that went around over the last week. Back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula? I'm ready. Frankenstein, then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, here we are. So, I'm sure all of you out there know, so I'm not going to go into all kinds of details. Google has all kinds of sort of internal discussion areas and blah, blah, blah. So one Google employee, a male engineer in his 20s, I believe, posted a 10-page statement going into how he thought Google was not approaching diversity correctly, let's say, that their attempts at this were misguided, and he talked about some of the reasons why he thought the problem was being misinterpreted, and, you know, the reason there were less women in tech, for instance, was not because of any sort of systematic discrimination or hostile work environment kind of stuff, but rather simply because, well, women wanted to do less of that kind of stuff or were not as well suited for it or whatever. And I'm not giving, I want to be fair to this document, because if you, I actually did read the whole thing, and he tried at least to give a lot of lip service to, you know, I want to be fair here. I want to hear the opposing position. I want to do this. I'm not trying to be discriminatory, blah, blah, blah.
But you know, he gave it lip service. You said the right thing. He gave it lip service. To me, the document was a coded document that just said, women don't know how to do this shit. Why the fuck do we bother to even bring him into this?
And that's certainly...
That's what it sounded like.
And despite, to me, despite
and
all
to a lot of women.
Despite all his disclaimers that that's not what he intended to say, that is certainly the impression that it left. And like one of the things I'll say right up front is he put some notes right at the beginning, where he actually said, look, here are the distributions that we see, and it would be unfair to look at averages alone. The distributions are wide. There is a lot of overlap. There's, you know, so, but then he completely then ignores that and does say things based on averages and generalizations, because honestly, the right conclusion is, look, there probably are some biological differences. There's certainly a lot of things that are not biological that are societal too. Those effects are often very hard to disentangle, even with the best research. But the one thing that's in common, and this applies to differences across gender, across races, across whether you're looking at IQ or achievement or whatever, is the width of those distributions is so wide, it overwhelms the difference in those averages. And so even if there is some, okay, this average is due to a biological component, which the evidence is very unclear, but even if that was true, let me finish my point. Even if that was true, which there is no good evidence of one way or the other, but even if that was true, the distributions are so wide that when you zoom out from it, they basically overlap completely. The differences are minor, and for any individual you are looking at, it is not predictive in the slightest. So if you make any sort of policy based on the differences in those averages, you are automatically already at that point doing the wrong thing. even if that was meaningful, which there's no good evidence that it is. And so, you know, he actually stated in the document this fact about, like, don't look, you know, we're going to talk, you don't look at the averages alone. You have to pay attention to the distribution. But then the entire rest of his document was essentially looking at those averages and looking at those stereotypes and looking at this stuff and not. But his entire basis for the actions he wanted are invalidated by the fact those distributions are so wide, and on any individual basis, pick individual A and pick individual B, it's not predictive in the slightest.
I mean, I'll look. I know from where you approached it. I'm going to approach it. I'm going to tell you my life experience. Okay. I got to be like in my early 20s, where if you went to, I went to an all men's high school, okay, and I went to a college that you and I went to that had a preponderance of men.
It was like 80% okay? male or something like that.
It was 60. It was, well, in your school, it was 80%.
Yeah, well,
on average, it was 60-something.
Yeah, like, okay, on average, it was 60-something, and it was, of course, more women in the humanities, less women in engineering and science, etc.
And let me put it, when I went to my MBA program, it was 90% male.
Okay.
It was ridiculous. Okay.
And I was in physics. I'm pretty sure our ratio was actually worse than that. I think there was one woman in our class. Maybe
there were like less than 10 out of 200 students.
Right.
In my program. So my impression up to a moment where I got to my job was that maybe women couldn't do these jobs or something or whatever. Up at my late 20s. Then lightning struck me. You know what happened?
What happened, Yvonne?
I met all these fucking women that were smart as all hell that I hadn't met in the other environments I had been. And I was just like, what a fucking fool I am to have ever thought this.
Right.
And the thing is that what this guy did was, you know, you would think that at the where we are in society, where there are so many more women in, you know, even back in the 90s, you know, there weren't that many as many women in a whole bunch of professions. And there are sure as hell a lot more now in positions of power. Even we had somebody that unfortunately lost the presidency and all of this shit, that a moron would write what he did and think it's okay to disseminate it internally at the company. If that guy worked for me and sent that out, I would have fired him. I thought about this week, managed a lot of people, managed a lot of men and women. And if that guy had published that to my team and the women on my team had read that, I would have had, I mean, even if they hadn't read it and I got a hold of this thing that he published internally so everybody could have read, I would have fired him. The reason for that is because he would have violated the standards of business conduct for almost every company that there is out there. Which one big thing about it is the respect for the other employees, okay? And that is why that was a gross violation of that. As a matter of fact, the fact that they hesitated to fire him was that they were trying to figure out how much of a shitstorm they were creating or not, in my belief.
Well,
because when I thought about it, it's just a gross violation and lack of respect for your peers. That guy had to be fired.
So they've gotten a lot of pushback, of course, from people saying they're violating free speech. They're making a work environment where people don't feel free to express their political opinions.
I'm sorry, the work environment is not a free speech environment. Okay, I don't know who the fuck said that the First Amendment applied inside the company. It doesn't. In any stretch, you've got the right under the Constitution, First Amendment. That doesn't mean that I can't fire your ass for saying something like that that insults other people and that I think that creates a hostile work environment. So no, Anybody who's saying it's a First Amendment reason, listen, this isn't that we're banning him publicly. You want to say that inside the fucking company? Fine, live with the fucking consequences. Because I definitely would not have an environment, a work environment, in which I got a moron publishing something like that and thinking that it's okay to do that.
So now, I basically agree with you, Yvonne, but I'm going to play devil's advocate here for just a minute so we can have a conversation.
Go.
So, you know, his argument is going to be, look, I wasn't trying to insult any women. I put in a lot of information about how this didn't apply to individuals. I'm talking about general policy. I'm talking about how we shouldn't be giving preferential treatment by letting there be organizations that are just for women. He actually said in the document, I'm for diversity. I think it's a good thing. I think it's something we should pursue. I just think the way that we're doing it is the wrong way to do it because it's unfair.
Yeah, the reason why he's saying it's a wrong... Yeah, the reason... Yeah, and then he goes in a wrong way. Oh, it's because women, let me see. What is it, the statements? Neuroticism and lack of drive impede women's career.
Yeah, but I read that and I'm like, yeah, that's okay. Not going to annoy anybody. That's not going to piss off anybody.
Wait. Women are passive and don't, you can't say all of that shit, okay, that you just said that he said, and then write this crap. Because what he said before was kind of like cover for him to be able to fucking like rip women to shreds. To say that they're incompetent and incapable.
Right.
Empathy steers women away from coding jobs. Fuck you.
Well, and one of the various responses to this also pointed out, and I think this was a very good point here, is, look, if you think that tech and people skills don't overlap, you're sorely mistaken. The only jobs where you can sit in a corner and code by yourself and not have to interact with people are the lowest level positions. As you start moving up to more senior positions, your job is more and more about people. Whether even if you're doing back end stuff, it's working together in groups. It's understanding how your product is going to affect the users. It's anticipating how your code is going to be looked at by someone new who comes in and looks at it 5 years later down the line when you're not there to explain what you did. You know, it's all kinds of things. And so those skills are actually important. And, you know, and so it's certainly not a deficiency. It's a strength, if anything, you know, let alone the fact that his whole, you know, women have this and men don't is kind of bullshit to begin with.
It's ridiculous.
But
it's ridiculous. Look, I'm sorry. I got, you know, I sent this note to you. I got in my family, for example, I have my sister-in-law's sister, who is a brilliant physicist. Okay. Who is a professor at Northwestern and was one of the people involved in the discovery of Higgs boson.
Okay.
Okay. And I got my, I can never pronounce that.
That's right. Okay. Go ahead.
My niece, who's 18 years old, is going into engineering. Okay. All right. With a with a scholarship, you know, and she has been involved in like coding, designing like she was designing a freaking robotic box, all this other stuff. That is what she does. Do not give me this fucking unfounded bullshit that women can't do it. They can and they do. The fact that for many decades, okay, for centuries actually, that we've kind of like pigeonholed women as they're the ones that are this and the men do the other fucking bullshit. It's just, you know, just where we as society have placed people and a lot of like with peer pressure and other things forced them to be. The reality is that when you actually put these people with the skills that they have and you put them out there, that's not the case. And here's another big fact. Like right now, more women are more driven and are going to school even more than men.
Yep.
That's the numbers. Okay? Those are the numbers. So, fuck you, you dumbass fuck, and I hope, you know, whoever the hell else hires your ass, because they said some people considering hiring his ass.
Oh, Julian Assange. I hope they get Julian Assange offered him a job at WikiLeaks.
Well, good. You know, what the hell? You know, together with Mr. I'm trying to avoid a rape investigation because, you know, whatever, and fuck the world. Go ahead. Go work with that fucko.
So let me ask you a question here. You when you described the reasons you would fire him, one of the things you said was if he disseminated this at work. So let me change the scenario around a little bit from what actually happened, where this was disseminated within work. What if he'd posted this on a personal blog? Or what if he'd if he had a personal podcast and he talked about it on his podcast, but did not make an effort to distribute it at work, and he was talking about the tech industry in general?
Okay, that's the different thing we're talking about. You know, First Amendment of freedom of speech. I don't feel like as an employee that for the most part that I have, you know, I don't regulate people's politics or regulate people's opinions. Okay, all right, that they can have outside work. Okay, that's up to them. All right, that's what they do, and that's the line of demarcation that I bring.
So if he had posted the exact same document, but posted it outside of work, and not done anything to promote it inside work.
I personally wouldn't have a problem with it.
Now, would that change if it nevertheless, despite him posting it outside work on his own, blah blah blah, if it became regardless, an item of discussion?
He didn't post it inside work. That was not his intention. If somebody brought it in, it's like, look, I mean, there are so many people that have some outside interest that some people find objectionable. Okay, things they do outside of work. And opinions, for the most part, those should not have a bearing on what you decide.
Because there could be an argument that there would still be a hostile work environment type thing created if people who had to work with him knew that he'd written this thing.
But you've got to draw a line between what you published. Like I said, he published this in an internal system versus doing it externally. Okay, all right. You know, what you do outside of work, okay. My perspective, you know, you have rights, you have a personal life. We can't regulate everything that you do outside of work. That's your thing. Okay.
Yeah. And look, I'll tell you,
And you cannot bring those judgments inside there. Look, like I got pissed off at certain people, for example, a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, somebody went and like found out that an employee that was at a company that at a company. Okay, I'm not going to, you know, whatever. They found out that she apparently worked as a stripper. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And look, people were bringing that to work. And my judgment, and I told to those people, I was like, look, hey, it's her life. They can do whatever the hell they want. It's not, you know, and why are you bringing that to work? I mean, look, if that's what they choose to do, that's what they choose to do outside of work. It's not illegal. You know, they're not stripping naked inside the frickin' office. So look, they can do whatever. And those are the kinds of things I don't like. People like, for example, there's a lot of people that I know have very hard positions on politics, on whether Republican or whatever the heck they are. Look, I have a number of employees that I know voted for Trump. Hey. It's their right. It's totally their thing. They're not bringing it into office. What I ask them is respectfully, I just tell them that is not, you don't discuss politics at the office. Period. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I think I'm basically with you on that distinction, because I think there is a very big difference between an employer regulating what is and is not acceptable at work, and putting whatever fucking restrictions they want on that, to be honest. And you can decide whether or not you want to work there based on those restrictions.
Right.
And what people do outside of work. Like, I think about, you know, us doing this podcast, you know, and I try very hard not to mention any details about where I work, what I do at work. I talk about it in the vaguest terms if I talk about it at all. But nevertheless, you know, we talk in an opinionated way on this show. if at some point my employer decided to get pissed about what I'm saying, that would really bother me. Like, if they wanted,
I agree.
If they wanted to even say, like, hey, we don't like the fact that you're doing this show, please stop it anymore, stop it, you know, I would be like, okay, that's a good reason to go find another job, you know, because I don't want my, you know, my outside of work stuff, you know, clashing with my work stuff. I don't think work has any business talking to me about what I do outside of work. And part of that agreement is I'm not going to talk about my work stuff either when I'm outside of work. You know, I'm not going to go blab things I'm not supposed to blab. That's part of the deal, you know. But at the same time, I expect that I can draw that line and say that when I'm not at work, when I'm not quote unquote on the clock, I can do whatever the fuck I want. I guess as long as it's legal. I mean, I suppose there's some, like, if I go commit some felonies, maybe they can fire me for that. But, you know, aside from that, you know, I should be able to do whatever I want outside of work and my employer shouldn't care.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
And frankly, even if I did commit some felonies, I think I should have to be convicted in order for them to do something, not just accused. Because there have been some incidents, and I feel really hazy about, not with me personally, but I've heard news stories where somebody gets accused of something and they have not gone through the process. They're fighting it in court, but they get fired for it anyway. And I don't think that's fair. I think you should be actually convicted, you know, before your employer can take action based on that kind of thing. But that's a whole other argument.
All right. Okay. Well, all right. We've beaten another subject to death.
Okay.
What are we going to talk about next?
Well, we're going to
talk about Venezuela.
Yes, we will talk about Venezuela. We will take a break and we will do a lightning round on some of these smaller topics that we don't think we have 20 minutes worth of stuff to talk about. But we will start by request from our loyal listener, Ed, who has sometimes co-hosted the show and who has signed up for our Slack. We will talk about Venezuela because he says, I believe his quote was, you know, with Venezuela, the situation is so stable that you can be sure you can talk about it and it's not going to change by the time you put out the show. Whereas anything we're talking about with Donald Trump, if you talk about it, you know, by the time you finish recording the show, it's all going to be different. Yep. We'll be back right after this. Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now, there are 4 ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at I-M-B-O-U, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you. Okay, Yvonne, you're the Latin American expert. What the hell is going on in Venezuela? I've only sort of peripherally paid attention to the fact that there was something going on.
All right. So the main thing that happened is that the dictator, really, because he's not even a president anymore, of Venezuela has been trying to consolidate power. He didn't have a majority in Congress, and he called for an election. The election was fraught with a lot of issues. There was a lot of boycott of the election. There was a lot of intimidating about the election. And look, he basically like manufactured a result that came out the way that he wanted. Okay. And,
Many countries have not recognized a result. And this is part of his campaign about trying to maintain an iron grip in power, which goes back to his predecessor, Hugo Chavez, who was doing that. Unlike some people that talk out of their ass about Venezuela, I mean, I not only have a lot of friends that are Venezuelan, but I have been to Venezuela multiple times over the last 20 years. I mean, the last time I will admit that the last time I went was about 9 years ago. And I was dissuaded by my friends in Venezuela from going back after that at the time. I mean, we're talking 9 years ago when things weren't as problematic. I mean, there were already food shortages and there were issues. The one thing that I remember vividly was that my driver pointed out that there were in three intersections that we drove by, they were littered with shell casings from bullets having been fired. Okay. This was in an hour and a half drive. We went right through three intersections littered with shell casings. When you get to Venezuela, what Hugo Chavez has done is he has a massive propaganda state. It is meant to try to maintain control of everything to his benefit. It's not a thing about, look, what he did was replace a whole bunch of people. A group of other people that were doing stuff for their benefit to just benefit his. That's it. This whole thing about a socialist revolution, what he did was try to buy off as many people as he could to vote for him. But he did that in a way that basically bankrupted the company, the country. he bankrupted the company as well. And I said that because the biggest generator of money in Venezuela was the oil company, PDVSA. And he bankrupted the company, okay? Which basically, by bankrupting PDVSA, he kind of bankrupted the country at the same time. I mean, Venezuela has more oil reserves than Saudi Arabia, and yet right now produces like 80% less oil. And large part of that is because the decisions that he made with the management of the company. When he took it over, the company was one of the most efficient in the world, and now it is one of the most inefficient in the world. Delayed capital investments, basically just raided it for money for his politics and so forth. And he has created an environment of fear. I've had friends of mine in Venezuela that had been shot at, kidnapped. Had one of my coworkers that worked with me when I worked at one of my previous employers actually killed on their way to the airport. It's a very serious situation in terms of the violence. And the thing is that the government has been inciting the violence. The way that they've incited the violence is he basically told the poor people that he gave money to that said that anybody that has more money than you is an oligarch. And he did that on purpose because he wanted to attack the middle class of Venezuela. The middle class was against him, and he thought that class warfare was going to maintain him in power. And the only way to do that is to have the poor people attack the middle class. And there's been a massive exodus of that middle class and class outside of the country. And that's the way that he's consolidated power. Because of the deteriorating financial situation of the oil company, he set currency controls. The currency controls had the perverse effect of basically eliminating access to almost any goods to the country whatsoever. Venezuela barely produced anything. They exported oil and they imported almost everything. They had almost no manufacturing of no exports of any kind whatsoever. And so if the oil revenue dried up, then imports of a lot of things, the goods that were necessary for the economy, have become impossible. And it's made it that quite a lot of goods of urgent need are scarce or not available. When he put the currency controls in and made it very difficult for companies to operate, what he said that was the companies that weren't producing goods like food or other things were just trying to screw the people. So he nationalized a lot of the production for food and other things.
So
that nationalization led to right now, led to a massive reduction in production of food. So there is a crisis right now, scarcity of food and of medicine. Okay. There is electricity is being rationed. There are shortages of any goods, like whether it's toilet paper, anything. Anybody that travels that has family down there, basically, they're filling their suitcases with, like, things of primary need. I mean, it's a situation that is close to total anarchy at this point.
So
people are afraid to walk the streets or do anything.
So let's jump to the sort of where we are we at sort of a critical point where things are going to snap and something big is going to happen and change here, or are we just on like a long downward spiral?
I think it is getting close to the point that it's got to snap. I mean, there is no way. People are hungry. They're dying. I mean, there is no food. There's lack of food. There's lack of medicine. A big part of it is because this whole thing with the currency control, all he's doing is with the currency control, only people that are friends of his can get access to hard currency, to U.S. dollars in order to buy imported goods. And all those goods wind up being diverted to only to people that are his friends and his cronies. And I'm talking about a very small elite at a high level. Everybody else gets screwed. I mean, the people are hungry and dying. At some point, I mean, they're just, you know, it's close to a breaking point because, I mean, that's the point of desperation. I don't see how something doesn't blow up about this soon.
Like,
I just don't see how it doesn't.
How soon is soon? Are we going to be like having
Next year. I don't think that
it... We're not talking like next week or something.
It could be next week. Okay. But you know, I give them the timeline of a year because I thought that it's been getting worse and worse and worse for an extended period of time. It's possible it could be next week, but it is possible it's next week. I mean, I do think that is possible. But it's a very difficult situation for people there. It's a situation. It's not just. I mean, think about when you're afraid to leave your house. You can't get food. You can't get even toilet paper. You can't get your medicines. You don't have electricity in your house. I mean, this is a country that had one of the largest middle class in Latin America 20, 30 years ago. And now is at a point where, I mean, people can't even get toilet paper. I mean, it's a very awful situation where they're at.
Okay. Last thought.
My last thought, I have a lot of friends that are down there. I just, you know, I have friends that live there, like, right now. I don't know. My last thought is that I really hope that something happens soon that makes this be better. And the only way it's going to get better is if this guy's gone in some way or another. He quits, he could deposed, whatever. I don't know. Honestly, he's a dictator that has taken over power. Right now, he gets overthrown. Look, he's done an overthrow of himself for himself. He's lied and cheated his way into trying to lock up power, so he gets overthrown. It's not exactly like, you know, it's an illegal act. He did an illegal act himself.
Okay.
To take power, so.
So we'll consider Venezuela your topic. I'll take a turn now. So I have watched movies and I have read a book. Which one would you like to hear about?
Let's go with a book.
Okay. So the book that I read, and it's actually probably been couple months now since I actually finished this, but is actually somewhat related to my job. I alternate, and this was an actual physical book. Well, I read it on Kindle. It wasn't actually on paper, but it wasn't an audio book. I actually like used my eyes to look at
animal
words.
You.
Yeah, I know. But I alternate on those. Like, I alternate between fiction and nonfiction. And every other nonfiction, I try to make something that is actually related to, you know, what I do for a living. And so this was a 2013 book about spam. Because, you know, I without going into details,
That's what you do.
Preventing
spam. So you you were reading a book about spam?
I read a book about spam.
So not the meat.
Not the meat, like, but one of the things that was actually interesting here and was this book. Let me just give the full reference for anybody out there. It's Spam, A Shadow History of the Internet by Finn Brunton. Okay. And it was from 2013, actually, so it's a few years old at this point. But one of the things that was interesting about it was it actually expanded it beyond simply what we think of today, you know, the email spam, and talked about, you know, in the early days of Usenet spam and also, you know, things that botnets are doing today and spammy content forms that were created for SEO optimization and things like that. And, you know, look, it was kind of interesting, but I'll tell you what, it took me a while to read. It did not, like, you know, super, you know, hold my interest as like, oh my God, I have to, you know, let's see, when did I start this thing? It took me like a year to read this damn thing. Okay.
A year?
About a year.
How many pages?
It was not a long book. I would like read three pages and then put it down and not read it again for several weeks. And then I would read three pages and, you know, it was that kind of thing where it was like, I'll tell you, the beginning especially was really, really tough for me because the way that the book started out was sort of very flowery, philosophical, vague, sort of conceptual stuff, trying to put spam into the context of blah, 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 blah. And I was going, oh my God, this is bullshit. This is so much bullshit. I can't believe I'm reading this. Do I have to keep reading this? Oh my God. But then once I got to about the 20% mark on this book, then it started really getting into the actual history. And started talking through the various developments of the early days of email and, you know, the first commercial posting on Usenet, which was right around our freshman year at CMU, if I remember correctly. You and I probably got this email, you know, or maybe it was right before we got there. I forget. But anyway, and they talked about the a phenomenon I definitely know, Yvonne, you and I were in college when the first day they let AOL onto the internet.
Oh,
you know, they called it the Endless September because what it in the internet before that, you know, every September you'd have all the influx of new freshmen who were seeing this stuff for the very first time and asking all kinds of dumb questions and blah, blah, blah. And then they let AOL on and that was the permanent state from that on point forward, you know. But, you know, once they got...
So we had that fantastic class of CSW, you know?
Yes,
remember
yes.
The old computer skills. We had a computer skills workshop class.
That's right. That's the one where you harassed Jill Innocenti.
Oh, God, yes.
We talked about that a few weeks ago. In any case, once we got into the history of how this developed from the early days through... And it also had quite a bit of history of the... Not just the history of what the spammers were doing and the economics of what they were doing, but also how the fight against it developed and the various techniques and the back and forth. And I actually found that much more interesting and much more compelling. And sort of as the book went on, I sped up and I did it at a more reasonable pace. Although it's still, I'll be honest here, a book like this has a hard time competing against Twitter for whatever the fuck is going on that morning and whatever Donald Trump is doing. Because, like, normally the times I would sit down and read a book like this are, you know, I'm first getting up in the morning and I'm reading a little bit before I go to work, or I'm reading something before I go to bed. But when there's all this shit going on, it's like, it's hard to maintain my attention on, let me read this slow, steady book, as opposed to, oh my God, what's happening right now this hour? So it is difficult for me to force myself into that discipline. So, I mean, I've not been doing as well in general of reading. And, you know, this book took me a goddamn year, approximately. you know, but I will say that after that first part of the book, which really was a slog, the rest actually got compelling and was very interesting to me to reveal to talk about this history. And some of it I knew, already, but some of it I didn't. I did find it interesting. And I liked how he connected various bits of this through the history. And I actually was looking, I was like, I wish this wasn't 2013, because I was very interested in, like, what would he say about the further developments from 2013 through 2017. Specifically, you know, we've had all this talk about the fake news and bots influencing the election and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it actually fits perfectly in with the theme and the development of this stuff. Cause honestly, that's just another form of spam being deployed for a different purpose.
Right.
And I was disappointed that it ended where it did in 2012 or 2013 and didn't cover the last few years, because there are a lot of interesting developments in the last few years. Anyway, that was that. Your turn.
Oh, boy, my turn. I don't have a well, oh, God.
Okay, I'll give you one.
You're
going to come up with something? Okay.
Wait, I'm going to give me a second.
Yeah, come on. Manafort raise. Manafort raid.
I was going to get to that. Damn it.
You were too slow.
Manafort raid. Oh, God, give me a break. You could have done better with the music.
Okay, talk to me about the Manafort raid.
So, what I can say about the Manafort raid, I mean, there's not that much to say about it. I mean,
it happened.
The FBI got a search. They got a search warrant. The FBI went and basically, apparently, my understanding was that apparently they went in and Manafort was in bed and they freaking raided his place. I mean, you know, in order to get the search warrant, you know, one thing that they have to show is, you do understand, they have to show probable cause, right?
Yes.
You know? So how deep is Manafort in?
I mean, he was theoretically cooperating with authorities. He was providing information. So the fact that they got a search warrant indicates, A, they think there's probable evidence of a crime. And B, they felt like they were not getting what they wanted through his quote-unquote cooperation. And that there was a significant danger that if they did not do this kind of raid, that evidence would be destroyed. Because they did not just, you know, serve him with a subpoena to get documents. That's, you know, it was a no-knock raid where they came in force and took what they wanted. So that is, as you said, it requires going to a judge. It requires a certain level of evidence. There's stuff going on. Now, of course, we don't know what they found or if they found anything. It may well be that they only found that, oh, he already gave us everything. Who knows? I think it'll be a long time till we necessarily find that out. But it means that they believe that there was something there to get.
Yeah.
Now the one thing.
What do you think what's the level of worry and concern you think that Trumpy is
at right now with all this shit?
I think they're nervous. I don't know about Trump himself. I think Trump himself may still be deluded that there's nothing here. But I think the people around him are shitting bricks.
Yes.
Now, the other thing that I thought was surprising about this is the actual raid happened like 2 weeks ago.
And right.
We're just getting the leak about it now.
Right.
And that is surprising to me, not because I expected like Manafort's shop to leak or the FBI to leak. Like Manafort's shop has been fairly, you haven't heard leaks coming out of them directly.
Correct.
They've been super locked down. Mueller out of Mueller's shop. You have not had leaks coming directly out of there. It seems like all the leaks we've had are from elsewhere. But in this case, I'm actually surprised that this stayed quiet this long. I didn't expect Mueller's folks to leak, but there's no reason Manafort couldn't have said something about it. Manafort had neighbors. Didn't they notice something was going on? You'd expect like,
well, maybe they did, but I guess they didn't blab about it.
Well, but why not? Like, if I lived in an apartment down,
maybe they're good buddies.
Maybe they're good buddies, but I'll tell you, if Manafort was in my apartment building and I lived in the apartment building and noticed there was a fucking FBI raid one morning, I'd be on the phone with CNN before the FBI left.
You at least posted on Twitter or something.
Yeah, like, exactly.
The FBI is here. You know, what the fuck?
And somebody would put two and two together and say, oh, wait, that's where Manafort lives. You know, right. But no, nobody did that. Manafort didn't talk. Manafort's lawyer didn't talk. I'm sure like Manafort had to have told somebody that this happened. Nobody said a damn thing until there was a leak 2 weeks later. And it's unclear to me exactly where the leak came from. But here's one thing about
a whole bunch of the leaks coming out of the White House. It does seem it is becoming to me epically clear that a lot of the leaks are, how do I say, these are people that are Trumpies that think that a whole bunch of these leaks are actually helping whatever cause they are driving and not necessarily damage. They're doing them to drive their agenda, which they believe eventually means pro-Trumpy thing.
Yes.
Even though they are being pretty damaging overall to the credibility of the White House,
because everyone thinks that they have the right agenda, and the other people in the White House don't have Trump's best interests in mind, or something.
Correct.
And of course,
yep.
And Trump encourages all this shit as much as he says leaks are bad. Like this is,
and he is encouraging this internecine warfare at the White House. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, he brought in the mooch. And now, I mean, I don't know. Now, whatever the hell. I mean, he's got, you know, I mean, all these people are at each other's throats, as far as we can tell.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, they're trying to, I mean, they keep trying to undermine McMaster. They want him out as well. I mean, you know,
yeah. One of the things that's come out in the last couple of days as well is the State Department memo that was circulating that, you know, from sort of Flynn loyalists in the NSC about how the deep state and the big conspiracy against right. Donald Trump and all the Marxists. And it's like, what?
Yeah, I know.
And apparently part of the conflict that's going back and forth is McMaster was, you know, firing some of the people responsible for this memo or distributing it. And so they're interpreting this as an anti-Trump thing and more evidence of the deep state out to get Donald Trump. Now, on the one hand, you know, these folks are somewhat paranoid and crazy, but if what this means is, you know, the rational adults who've been around a long time who feel that their job is to protect the country against Donald Trump's extravagances, even if they are conservatives and generally agree with him, but recognize he's a little bit out there and want to keep things on an even keel. If that's the deep state, then thank God for the deep state, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
there's been so many leaks, including like on Trump himself keeps freaking.
Oh, yeah. He's half the leaks himself.
Yes.
Okay, speaking of Donald Trump stuff, it's my turn now. A couple of things here. I just want to go through the Donald Trump crazy statements of the last, well, couple weeks, really. We didn't talk last week about how he made statements to a gathering of police about roughing up suspects.
Yeah.
That was fun. And then more recently, he finally, after a long time, made a comment about the Russians expelling a bunch of U.S. diplomats.
Oh.
And his comment was basically, thank you, Putin, for doing this. It helps us reduce our staffing levels, which we wanted to do anyway.
What an idiot.
Which, first of all, they're not actually fired or anything. They still work for the fired. State Department.
Right, you fucking fucko dumbass.
But even if they were, really? This is the response?
Look. Like I was talking to somebody down here at the restaurant, like when I was having dinner. Look, what is everything that he does just shows that he's got him. I mean, either he's in his Putin's pocket or he's got him over a barrel over something.
Well, I was thinking about this a little bit. And of course, that's the natural interpretation here. To be generous, here's the other possible interpretation is that
he's an idiot.
Well, yeah, but no, that okay, I'm going to react to somebody doing something that hurts me by pretending it doesn't hurt, by saying, oh, I was going to do that anyway, you just did me a favor, so whatever you were trying to do, completely ineffectual.
I do get that. I do get that, and I thought about that, but the one thing is that the statement is so stupid. I mean, the statement's moronic. That's not really true. You're saving any fucking money. None of these people are fired. And, you know, I guess it's just that the statement was stupid. That's just it, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, you got another
one? What else did Trump say? Anything that we missed?
Those were the two big ones I could think of. Unlike most weeks, I didn't have
fire
a
and
big
fury.
One. We had the fire and fury, but we talked about that already.
We talked about that. He said that he supposedly was going to talk about the opioid crisis, but then he didn't. He was going to make a major speech.
Well, he declared a national emergency or whatever about it, and yeah,
Now he's attacking a McConnell.
Yes, 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 he is.
I guess Sessions is off the shit list for
tomorrow. Well, he made a number of statements saying that he's not going to fire Sessions, he's not going to fire Mueller. He's not ranting about that this week.
This week. So now he's taking on McConnell, right?
Yeah. Well, and because a lot of senators. Well, not just senators, other congresspeople have basically pretty close to flat out said that at this point they're going to do what they're going to do and they're going to ignore whatever Donald Trump is ranting about this week because he was going on about how they have to do health care and blah, blah, blah. Don't do anything else before
you
get
out. Fuck you, whatever. We're on vacation. Give me a fucking break.
Well, and also when we come back, we've got other shit to do. We're not going to go back to healthcare right now. I mean, we talked about when we were talking about the healthcare stuff last week, I do expect it's going to come back at some point in some form, but they want to do some other stuff right now. They want to move on to taxes. They've got the debt limit. They've got all this stuff coming up in the next couple months that they want or need to do. So
I heard that they kept proposing a freaking debt limit deal that
pay for the wall and
wall fund. Yeah, yeah, and people are like, fuck you. Like, come on, give me a break.
Now, there was also the plan that they proposed about Cutting legal immigration in half and adding a points-based test kind of thing to it?
Yes. Yeah.
And as far as I can see, this thing's going to be dead on arrival at the Congress. But they were
making, another dead on arrival thing.
But they were making a point to their base about making this statement.
Yeah, I know. So that's all he does, like, right now. It's all just, you know, about the base. And that's it. All right. I'm exhausted. I got to call it a day.
Okay. Anything else we'll leave on the backlog to potentially talk about in future weeks? Specifically, there's this donuts and water thing. We'll leave it be.
It was just stupid. Whatever. You read it. It was stupid. At first I was like...
we're not going to talk about it. It's part of this larger theme that I think we're going to be hearing a lot about for the next 2 years at least, until at least the next year and a half until the 2018 election. And probably straight through to 2020. Because we have this whole thing.
Cuddle up the Jill Stein.
We have this whole thing between the Sanders wing of the party, of the Democrats, and the centrist wing of the party, and it seems like they're intent on going to war with each other. Which is,
and it's not even the entire Sanders part. There is a fringe of that side that is just, you know, and they were like that in the election last year too.
Yeah. So anyway, we don't have to get into it now. I think it is going to be a theme, probably from now straight through 2020. To be honest, that this is the schism in the Democratic Party. I suspect if Hillary Clinton had won, we'd be talking about the schism in the Republican Party. It's like whoever lost that election was going to have this kind of issue. But it's the Democrats, and the Democrats have the split. I mean, honestly, the Republicans clearly have some issues right now as well. And we were just talking about Congress versus Donald Trump and not necessarily getting along. So we got interesting stuff there, and it'll move along. Anyway, as Yvonne said, let's wrap up the show. I think this week we actually are going to manage to stay under 2 hours, which has been our goal.
Wow.
We've had a goal to be under 2 hours for the last few weeks, and we've failed utterly. So I think we're actually going to make it this time. Thank you all for joining Curmudgeon's Corner yet again. As usual, I will do the main things here. If you want to get in touch with us, if you want to participate in telling us what you think about the show, all of that kind of stuff, facebook.com/curmudgeonscorner, like us there. If you enjoy the show, use that mechanism to share the episodes with your friends, tell them they should check it out too, all of that kind of stuff. But leave comments on the shows. You can go back and forth with us. You can discuss it. You can give us suggestions. But if you really like the show, if you really like the show a lot and you want to help support us and help us, you know, do this show better and whatever, and help defray some of our costs, because frankly, we lose money every show we do. You go to our Patreon, patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. And there are all sorts of different levels. At the higher levels, you can get a mug and postcard from us and all kinds of stuff. But now, brand new, at the $2 a month level, you can get invited to our Slack to, you know, throughout the week, you know, chat with Yvonne and I, share links with us, see the stuff that we're talking about as we're preparing the show, stuff like that. So if you're interested, come to Patreon, throw us a couple bucks, and join us. And that's it. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see next week if we're at war or not. Has Guam been nuked? Has Guam been attacked in any way? Have we attacked anybody? It's all kinds of fun stuff. Right. You never know what's going to happen these days. So there you go.
Yep, that's us.
Okay, everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Oh, one more thing. I just want to mention, we hit a record this week. The most downloads of Curmudgeon's Corner in a 7-day period ever in the history of the show happened this week.
Yay, go us!
So thank you specifically for any new listeners who are tuning in for the first time this week. Honestly, we started at running some ads on Overcast, which is a popular iOS podcast player, and apparently It works okay. We've had a bunch of new listeners. So if you are a new listener checking out our show, we would love to hear from you. And thanks for checking us out. And, you know, even if you've checked out the show and decide it's not for you and you're going to move on, thank you for listening anyway and giving us a shot. We appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. And a little again, another little clap for ourselves for a new record. Yep. Okay, that's it for real this time. Goodbye, everybody. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Adios.
Bye.